This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehias Wahib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
I hope that the country has learned clearly that elections are not conducted on social media.
That was Izinwa Nwangwu, chairman of Nigeria's Partners for Electoral Reform, on the opposition's failed attempt to overturn the results of February's national elections. Details coming up. Also, Sudanese Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan is in Doha for his third recent trip abroad. And China has pledged to help South Africa with its crippling energy crisis. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Opposition groups in Zimbabwe say there has been a crackdown on their members since last month's election, including the alleged abduction of two Harare city councillors. Reporter Kuzai Zinwashi in Harare has more.
Two opposition members who were elected to the Harare Council were reportedly abducted, tortured, and left for dead days after the August 23rd vote. Promise Mkwananzi is the spokesperson for the main opposition group, the Citizens Coalition for Change. He says the incident is not isolated and alleges supporters of the governing ZANU-PF party are behind the attacks.
Our opposition members are under threat across the country, continue to receive reports of vindiction, reports of intimidation and witch hunting across the country on our members.
He links the crackdown to last month's election and the declaration that Emmerson Mnangagwa had won a second term in office. International observers from the Southern African Development Community, the United States, European Union, the Commonwealth and the United Nations said the election was highly flawed.
ZANU-PF did not win. That is the motivation of this crackdown. It's precisely because they did not win this election. And Mr. Mnangagwa's vindictiveness against the people of Zimbabwe for not voting for him. There is a lot of anxiety on the next steps of the opposition with regards to the stolen election. And Mnangagwa knows that he is not settled in that position. And any time from now, there will be processes that will lead to a fresh election in Zimbabwe.
Farai Marapira is the acting director of information for ZANU-PF.
As the ruling party, we have learned to take all accusations from the opposition with the pinch of salt that it deserves. Because if you're to look at it, they have so many accusations that abound and that are going around, but very little substance to them. So unless and until evidence is put before us, we are not going to be concerned with that.
Marapira says ZANU-PF is focused on their renewed mandate to run the country and deliver on their election promises. He urges the opposition to channel its efforts on fulfilling what they have promised to those who voted for them. Police officials in Zimbabwe have said they are investigating the reported abduction of the two Harare councillors. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinwashi in Harare, Zimbabwe.
The Presidential Election Petitions Court has affirmed the validity of Bola Tinubu's election as Nigeria's president in February, rejecting a series of challenges. Opposition groups, however, say the plan to appeal the ruling continues. Our reporter in Abuja, Nigeria, has more.
In a hearing that ran more than 12 hours, the five-judge panel dismissed all the allegations brought by the Allied People's Party, Labour Party, and the People's Democratic Party as lacking merit. The opposition parties had alleged elections had been rigged and that Bola Tinubu, who leads the All Progressives Party, had been improperly declared the winner. Frank Tietje, a lawyer and political analyst, told VOA the judgment came as no surprise to many.
Many Nigerians, especially the supporters of the Labour Party and the People's Democratic Party, had hoped against hope that despite their constant declaration that they don't have confidence in the Nigerian judiciary, they were just thinking that something otherwise miraculous would have happened if the justices had taken a different decision.
Tete said it would be unwise to appeal the decision to the Supreme Court after the way it played out at the tribunal.
The justices of the Court of Appeal delivered the judgment in such a manner that it would be very difficult to fault and very difficult to overturn. Therefore, it will be an additional misery for the supporters of PDP and Labour Party if they go on appeal to the Supreme Court, knowing full well that they don't have confidence in that court.
The chairman of Partners for Electoral Reform, Ezenwanwagwo, called on electoral stakeholders to take a lesson from the justices' deliberations.
I hope that the country has learned clearly that elections is not conducted on social media. Election is polling unit-centric, meaning that it is in the polling units, that's the theater of election, and it is at what happens at the polling unit that matters. The politicians will have to learn to have party agents and not rely on hearsay or reports of journalists or social media influencers.
The justices said the Labour Party and People's Democratic Party failed to prove that the election results were deliberately manipulated. There are fears the court's judgment may further polarize the nation. Political analyst Victorson Albenson thinks otherwise.
I don't think so. We are already where we are. Everybody is already set on the path that they are on. It will only mean that the leadership of the nation should work hard to ensure that Nigeria is better. If Nigeria is better, I think tempers will calm down, people will forget about the past and prepare for the next election.
The Labour Party and the People's Democratic Party have indicated they intend to appeal the ruling. In the meantime, President Tinubu has welcomed the court's decision and called for united efforts to build the nation. For VOA News, from Abuja, Nigeria.
Central Africa's mediator for Gabon and the country's new military ruler have agreed to draw up a roadmap for restoring democratic rule. General Brice Oligui Nguema was sworn on Monday as interim president after spearheading a coup on August 30th that ended a half-century of rule by the Bongo family. The Economic Community of Central African States, ECOWAS, sent its envoy, Central African Republic President Faustin Archange Touadéra, to Libreville yesterday for talks with Oligui in an effort to swiftly return the country to civilian rule. The French news agency AFP says a senior official in Oligui's entourage confirmed that the pair had merely agreed at this stage to draw up the blueprint. The 11-nation ECOWAS has suspended Gabon's membership and ordered the immediate transfer of its headquarters from Gabon to Equatorial Guinea. Gabon's coup was the ninth in Africa since 2020 after takeovers in Guinea, Chad, Sudan, Niger, and two each in Mali and Burkina Faso. Joseph Siegel, director of research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, noted that they build on other cases of dominant militaries hijacking democratic movements to retain ultimate authority in Egypt, Zimbabwe, Algeria, and Burundi. Siegel explained to VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi what is driving the rise in military coups in Africa.
There's a variety of factors at play here. The tolerance we've seen for the earlier coups, and as these coups are accommodated by the African Union and regional economic communities, it's opened the door for other military actors who have political ambitions to seize power. And so there's a momentum going on. Second, I would say, is that it's an outgrowth of growing politicization we've seen of militaries over recent years, where some political actors within Africa will politicize militaries as a means of ensuring their own regime survival. But in the process of politicizing the military, it creates incentives for those close to power to see that with an additional step on their part, they themselves can gain power. And thereby, instead of just being close to power, they themselves are the power. I think what we're seeing also reflects the long legacy of military government in Africa, and particularly in the countries where we've seen the coups. And within these militaries, there is a persistent sense of entitlement to govern, where they haven't fully accepted the notion that democratically elected civilians have the only genuinely legitimate authority to govern. And instead, they see themselves as being a rightful authority to govern their states. And so we're seeing this resurgence and mentality among different African militaries. And a very clear example of this was vividly displayed when we saw the Niger coup, and immediately when ECOWAS was threatening that they would intervene to help restore the democratically elected president, that you saw the military juntas in Mali and Burkina Faso rise up in defense of the junta in Niger. And so what we're seeing is this coalition of military juntas now defending the rights of military juntas to govern in Africa. So it's a very direct affront to civilian democratic government in Africa.
You also indicated that there are also cases where elected leaders undermine democratic checks and balances in office to consolidate power and prolong their tenures, such as Tunisia's Outokou. But let me note that the African Union membership includes leaders who are either undemocratic or masters of manipulating the constitution to extend their term limits. How could the African Union be influential in countering the tide of military coups in Africa?
There have been some 13 different African leaders who evaded term limits in the last several years. And with fewer African leaders really being committed to and in power because of their democratic credentials, it weakens the ability of regional bodies to step in. Nonetheless, I believe that the regional actors must play an essential role in reversing this tide of coups. Otherwise, we're likely to see many more coups on the continent. And they can do this in a number of ways. And one is to just be very clear that you're not going to recognize the coups when they occur. And there's an important historical point here, an evolution between what the Organization of African Unity versus the African Union was all about. Between 1960 and 2000, there were 82 coups in Africa. And as part of the founding of the African Union, there was a concerted effort to move past the OAU's policy of non-interference to one of calling out coups and moving to a policy of non-indifference. And between 2000 and about 2020, we saw a dramatic decline in the number of coups on the continent. And in fact, they adopted the African Charter on Democracy, which stipulates that any member state who endures an extra constitutional seizure of power, you know, should lose their membership as part of the African Union. And it authorizes other penalties against those mounting coups. And so I think what we're seeing today is a real challenge to the regional bodies to see just how committed they are to these principles, and then to persist in trying to ensure that there are costs on those who are engaging in them.
That was Joseph Siegel, Director of Research at Africa Center for Strategic Studies in Washington, speaking with VOA Senior Analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. You're listening to Africa News Tonight on The Voice of America. The school year has begun in the Democratic Republic of Congo, but in parts of North Kivu province, many students did not return to class. In the M23 rebel-occupied territory of Rutshuru, some schools say not a single child showed up on Monday, the first day. Reporter Zanem Neti Zaidi has details from Goma.
There are over 100,000 school-aged children in Rutshuru, about 60 kilometers from the provincial capital of North Kivu province, Goma. but at the Luweshi Institute, a Protestant school, only 9 students showed up on the first day, Monday, and 7 came on Tuesday. Vincent Kabori is one of those students. He says, although he is not in uniform, he showed up at school but doesn't have any supplies to use, including pens, pencils, or paper. He and other students who came are asking for help. The staff were at the school, but teacher Paluku Matabishi says no classes were held because there weren't enough students. He says he is wondering how he is going to stand in front of one student present in a room that is supposed to hold between 50 and 6 students. It is a problem, he says, because it is difficult to begin lessons when the others are not present. The area is controlled by the M23 rebel group, and thousands of people have fled the fighting between the rebels and the government forces. Parents who stayed are reluctant to send children to school because they worry about safety. Headmaster Augustin Luikyo asks parents to bring their children to school despite their fears. He says there are pupils who have already answered the call. The teachers are all there and the offices are opened. Parents should not worry about the children's conditions because today he even accepted students who do not have uniforms. The Minister of Primary, Secondary and Technical Education, Tony Mwaba, said Monday that most of Ruchuru's children now are in camps for displaced people. He says there are a lot of displaced people in the area. In Ruchuru, for example, over 250 schools have been closed and teachers and pupils have moved to Goma. The solution he has found is to create tent schools on site in the camps of the displaced. During the summer break, the M23 rebels also called for parents and school authorities to open schools in the areas under the group's control. For VOA Africa, I'm Zane Mneti Zaidi in Goma.
An African work of art about the experiences of migrant women in Johannesburg is getting rave reviews across Europe. Combining music, dialogue, and art, it's on a show at one of the world's most famous art exhibitions, the La Biennale de Venezia in Venice, Italy. Darren Taylor reports.
Welcome to Hillbrow. You will find your people here.
The project's based on a book by Kenyan sociologist Caroline Kiato. Her co-creators are two South Africans, composer Claire Loveday and pianist Maruli Stolp, and Ghanaian artist Sedinam Awo Tsega. The name of the work, You Will Find Your People Here, comes from one of the women in Kiato's book. To escape war in Congo, says Kiato, the woman paid a smuggler to get her to Johannesburg.
And after, you know, a week or so in the back of a truck, being cramped, being scared, will we pass through this border, will we get through the next? She arrives in Hillbrow, and the driver opens the back of the van and says, "Welcome to Hillbrow, you will find your people here."
Hillbrow's an area in central Johannesburg. The work highlights the dislocation experienced by migrant women arriving in one of Africa's biggest, but also most violent cities, hoping to prosper, but at the same time being terrified. In the performance, Stolp combines dissonant, disturbing piano with storytelling and unsettling vocals to express the experiences of the women on whose behalf she speaks.
The cacophony of the city sounds accosted her ears. Stood on the sidewalk and looked up at the towering apartment blocks.
Loveday says it took her 2 exhausting years to compose the music that would eventually tell the stories of 5 migrant women.
I was very careful not to be illustrative, so that if someone said, "I went walking down the street," the piano then doesn't go donk, 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 you know, that kind of almost Charlie Chaplin-esque illustration. So I spent a lot of time trying to find like in-between space where the music could sit to give space to the words and the experiences of these women in order to concentrate and focus and add to that text rather than making it into a kind of musical drama.
As the drama unfolds, audiences gaze at a backdrop of Tsega's colourful patterned fabric, safe in one of the world's grandest theatres as African migrants cross the Mediterranean trying to reach Italy. It's rich irony, says Chiatto. Accommodation and
work in that. The space is actually a space not welcoming to migrant women and especially to Africans. And what was interesting about us using these African fabrics and designs is that the women were saying, we are unapologetically here. We will find our people in Venice. And this was really a way of turning on its head this idea that all Africans bring is dirt and vermin and chaos and poverty, but we're saying that we actually can bring music and light and art to this space.
Name, Hannah. Spell it.
This is not entertainment, says Chiatto. It's about showing Europeans a different world.
They too can engage and can connect with the experiences of these women who come to Johannesburg. Because in one way or another, we are drawing on common human emotions of loss, of dislocation, of love, of inspiration, of finding love, of finding prosperity, of thinking about our futures. And by exposing Europeans to this kind of work, maybe we can have a more informed discussion around migration, around humanity, and the fact that we are all humans, and our movement is part of that humanity.
Loveday's talking with the Royal Opera House in London about the possibility of transforming You Will Find Your People Here into an all-women's opera. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
Malawian. M-A-L-A-W-I-A-N. He squeezed the extra letters together. There weren't enough blocks on the form.
Sudanese Army Chief Abdel Fattah al-Burhan arrived in Doha today for talks with Qatar's emir, his third recent trip abroad. The French news agency AFP says Burhan and Qatar's Sheikh Tamim bin Hamad al-Thani would discuss bilateral relations, issues of common interest, and the five-month-old conflict between the army and the paramilitary rapid support forces in Sudan. Late yesterday, Burhan issued a decree dissolving the RSF, saying his decision was based on their rebellion against the state, grave violations against citizens, and deliberate sabotage of the country's infrastructure. And with that, we wrap up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest development on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Adrius Rigas, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM stations.